The Israel Report with Rolene Marx.
Rolene Marx, how are you? I don't know, 81?
You are killing me, Howard Feldman.
No, but can you imagine the efficiency here in South Africa? We couldn't execute, I don't think we could do one person per week because there'd be so much going on. But anyway, 81 people, that is absurd.
Well, talk about that load shedding, honey. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, let's focus on what is going on in Israel. And, of course, Lapid meets Romanian counterpart. Why is that relevant? What's happening there?
Well, Israel is doing everything we possibly can, not just to give humanitarian aid to the Ukrainian people and also to help with evacuations from Ukraine. And if people aren't aware of it, Israel's one of the only countries that has its diplomats stationed at all major crossings. And we haven't just been helping Israeli citizens evacuate now war-ravaged Ukraine. We have also managed to help a lot of citizens from Morocco, Lebanon, Egypt, Syria, the Gaza Strip, and the Palestinian Authority, some of them complaining that their leaders have just basically left them there to fend for themselves. But on the diplomatic front, Israel is also doing everything we can. Yesterday, we had another conversation between Prime Minister Bennett and President Zelensky. We have heard murmurings that Putin has agreed that at least softened his stance that Jerusalem might be a good venue to mediate talks. This is what President Zelensky wants. There was a story that broke over the weekend in the Jerusalem Post and in Walla News and on Axios by the journalist Barak Ravid that said that basically Israel had been pressurizing President Zelensky to accept Russian terms. This is not true. That has been clarified not just by President Zelensky and his office, but also by officials in Prime Minister Bennett's office. Israel is adamant, we are not making recommendations or pressurizing anybody to accept anything. What we will do is relay terms to each side, and Jerusalem could be a possible venue. So this trickles down now to our foreign minister, Yair Lapid, who flew to Romania. He was at the Siret border crossing, and he went there to assess the situation vis-a-vis humanitarian aid for himself. And he says, you know, we will not close our gates and our hearts to people who have lost everything, and we have a moral obligation to be part of the international effort to help refugees from Ukraine find a warm home and a bed to sleep in. It is our duty not only to be good Jews, but also amazing, good people. Yesterday, very interestingly, because somebody asked me, have we heard from our finance minister, Avigdor Lieberman, who is Russian? Yesterday, he said, we absolutely have to do everything we can to help Ukrainian refugees. He also appealed to people not to get hysterical over the fact that some refugees, at least 20 of them, had to sleep at Ben Gurion Airport. He said, you know, this is a refugee situation. It's a war situation. And we also had the chief Ashkenazi rabbi, Rav Lau, also saying, Israel, this is our duty. We have to not only supply the humanitarian aid on the ground, we have to be a safe haven for refugees.
Incredible. Absolutely amazing how Israel really is stepping into this, and in a way that really can't benefit her, because you really putting yourself in the most difficult position. Zelensky wants a rally at Yad Vashem.
Well, this is quite astounding. And you and I spoke on Friday about how very, very adept he is at controlling the narrative, you know, controlling the optics around him, and especially as Russia is using this horrendous rationale as the denazification of Ukraine. And I know that there's many people out there, and believe me, I see the WhatsApp letters saying, but you know, Ukraine's history, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Let's not forget Russia's history with the Jewish people, also, you know, nothing to sing home about. And we can't forget that Ukraine was considered part of Russia, part of the Soviet empire during the Second World War. But yesterday, President Zelensky appealing to Yad Vashem as a place to hold a rally, and the director of Yad Vashem telling the Ukrainian ambassador that while Yad Vashem unequivocally stands with the Ukrainian people, and also turned down a massive endowment from Roman Abramovich, the oligarch who is faster heading on the downslope and has broken ties with him, we cannot allow for Yad Vashem to be a center point of political discussions, debate, and what many feel as grandstanding. You know, to the Jewish people and certainly to Israelis, Yad Vashem is seen as almost as holy ground, and it's not ground that we use to make political points. I would be interested to hear what the listeners think about that.
Yeah, it's almost guaranteed of a hiding to nothing, because it's such a complex situation. And I think we do have to put to bed this whole nonsense about what Ukraine's past was. We know what Ukraine's past was, and we know the suffering, and we know that there is no more blood in the soil, Jewish blood in the soil of Ukraine than anywhere else. We know that. But it doesn't matter. It's really not for us to try and determine now sins of our fathers. You know, we're on this earth and we've got to do the good that we can do. Our job is to look around and see if there's suffering. And if there's human suffering, we have got to do what we can to end it. For us to use history as a way to remove ourselves emotionally from the suffering of people is an absolute disgrace. And I really can't get over that anybody would do that. I think it is absolutely appalling. You know what? You aren't God. Yes, you've got a spark of God in you. So now use that spark that you've got to bring good into the world. Look what's around you and do what's good, and stop looking, finding ways of history to decide that this is justice. It's appalling.
Well, I agree with you there. I think we have to look at what Ukrainian Jews have managed to build following a very dark period in our history, and just the extraordinary rebirth of Jewish communities all over the country. And here we have to give a huge shout out to Chabad and various other organizations for their tremendous commitment. And, you know, whatever your opinions about President Zelensky is, I don't think his grandparents could have envisioned a future where their grandson, Jewish, is the president of a country.
100%. Absolutely. Anyway, it just makes me completely dilly. In the meantime, though, before we talk about this U.S. journalist that's killed, whilst we're on the subject of Israel and Ukrainian refugees, what is the latest situation? Because there's some strange articles about people being returned, but then they're not being returned. Where are we with this?
Well, there has been a lot of criticism against the Minister of the Interior, Yelet Shaked, and some of the decisions made with regards to the accepting of refugees. So the general consensus amongst Israelis is let them come in. We actually know that many of them don't want to be refugees. They don't want to actually leave Ukraine, but have no choice as the fighting spreads across the country. So Israel will be admitting any Ukrainian with a relative living in Israel, and we're not capping it at just Jewish Ukrainians. We will be allowing Ukrainians who are not Jewish to seek a refuge. And, you know, it always fascinates me that there is so much criticism around Israel and Israel's acceptance of refugees. And then I turn to the United States and I see the leaders of the Jewish communities there, the Conference of Presidents of Major American Organizations. Yes, that is an organization, very long business card, appealing to Biden to say, open your borders, let these refugees in. So I do find it absolutely extraordinary, the level of criticism at Israel. Meanwhile, there are other countries that haven't and are far bigger and better equipped to handle refugees that haven't let any in.
Absolutely. Let's talk about this U.S. journalist that was killed.
US journalist, the name of Brent Renaud, 51 years old, award-winning freelance journalist, believed to be on assignment for the New York Times, was shot yesterday by Russian forces as they opened fire on a convoy. He was shot dead and one of his colleagues injured in hospital. Thank goodness he is okay. But, you know, in order to bring us the news as accurately as possible, and we really stress people get their news from accurate sources, we can't forget the enormous price paid by journalists who go in to cover a wartime situation. So we know that we have the first press-related casualty.
And it's not surprising. Yeah, I'm sure, unfortunately, there will be many, many more. Let's just talk about this UN letter. What is that?
Well, there's a letter going around on WhatsApps about Ukraine's history of voting at the United Nations. And I'm sure you, like me, have received it many times. I've seen it on social media and many people saying, well, maybe Israel shouldn't be playing such a role as a mediator given Ukraine's voting at the United Nations. Well, I just want to reiterate that on the big resolutions, like the resolution against the Durban conference, Ukraine was one of those countries voting on Israel's side. And I just want to echo what you said earlier. I really hope that we as a people and we as a country do not base our humanitarian aid and our ambitions, or at least our efforts to try and broker peace deals based on people's voting records or countries' voting records at the United Nations. You know, if this is the way we are going to view our help, our bilateral relations with other countries, you know, I think nearly every country at some stage or the other hasn't had a clean voting record as far as Israel is concerned at the United Nations.
Yeah, I just think we have to, you know, there's so much noise, and all we've got to do is just remove the noise and look at the issue. And if we can do that, we can put ourselves and the world in a much, much better position. Let's talk about L. Paul O'Brien. What did he have to say?
Okay. I mean, this is just astounding. So Paul O'Brien is the U.S. director of Amnesty International. I mean, you would think now, Howard, that they would have some other priorities with human rights going on in the world, but
not so much.
No, he was addressing a luncheon last week of Democratic Women, and he had the absolute audacity to say that he doesn't believe it, and he's organization doesn't believe that Israel should be a state-based or that you should have let me get this very, very right, that Israel shouldn't exist as a Jewish state. Hmm? This is what he says. I mean, this is somebody who has just released a report accusing Israel of the practices of apartheid, and then, bang, the mask drops. At this lunch, and he says Israel shouldn't exist as a Jewish state, and that this is based on his gut feeling, Howard.
It's a gut feeling.
Well, I don't think you should hear what my gut feeling is. He says, right. He says that he has spoken to American Jews, and American Jews want a safe Jewish space. And he says, I think they can be convinced over time that the key to sustainability is to adhere to what I see as core Jewish values, which are to be principled and fair and just in creating that space. Well, we did create a space according to Jewish values that's safe for Jews. We call it the State of Israel.
But is there something Maybe wrong with him? The arrogance of that. Imagine telling Muslim worshippers, people of Muslim faith, what their core values are. Or should be. According to your gut.
Based on your gut instinct.
Yeah, imagine telling any other person or any other race that what their core values should be based on your own gut. The arrogance of it is astounding. And as you said, talking about the masks slipping, we are in the week of Purim, but wow, absolutely incredible. Rolene Marks, it's 8 o'clock. Thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place at 7:45.